Good morning, everyone. So we are going to talk mainly, I'm going to talk a little bit about general conservatorship so that you understand how it's different from alternatives to a general conservatorship, which is a limited conservatorship, for example, and other things we're going to talk about today. So let's talk about children and young adults before the age of 18. Who has authority over these human beings, right? It's the parents who have the legal authority over these young people. And the authority is all encompassing. So when we're talking about where they're going to live, where the kids are going to school, parents are responsible for the children's health, for feeding them, for clothing them, for housing them, for meeting all their personal needs. The other way in California that someone has authority over a young person below the age of 18 is if there is a guardianship. And to get a guardianship, you have to go to court, and someone is assigned that responsibility for that young child or young adult below the age of 18. There are a few alternatives to guardianship in California. One of them is that the person and the parents agree that this person is going to have authority over the child. It's a written agreement. And the parent can take away that right from that person at any time. Another alternative to a guardianship is under the Family Code section 6550. It's called the Caregiver's Authorization Affidavit. And there's a link there to the document. And the document actually looks like this. It's two pages. And a relative, the relative is defined in this document. It could be a grandparent, uncle, aunt, and other people, stepbrother or stepsister, half-sister, uncle, niece, nephew. Well, a relative can fill out this caregiver's authorization, and it will give that relative authority to enroll a minor child in school and to authorize school-related medical care. And in this document, this person who signs it and fills it out says that I've advised the parent having legal custody of the minor of my intent to do these things that are school related, or I'm unable to contact the parent or the person with legal custody. But that doesn't mean that the parent's legal rights over the child are taken away with this document. It only authorizes a relative to do certain school-related things. The parent never loses, like I said, legal custody of the child. So that's what is happening before the age of 18. Now, when someone turns 18, they become an adult, and they have the right to decide issues of their person. So it involves, to eat, where to, how to live. Now they're responsible for their themselves, right? Their education, all their personal needs. They also become responsible for their finances and over their finances. And there has to be a legal document that allows another person to decide these matters. So parents with young adults and their children or persons with disabilities, they become concerned as their child is nearing the age of 18 about their ability as a parent to continue to make decisions or help make decisions for their, young adult disabled child. But again, like I said, there has to be some legal document that will allow the parent or someone else to have that authority. Otherwise, the moment the person turns 18, they get to decide everything about their lives. The first reaction that a lot of people have when they're thinking about, especially, you know, a disabled child about to turn 18 is, oh, I need a general conservatorship. I need that kind of conservatorship. And that process is a process that you have to go to court for. You have to file what are called a petition for conservatorship in your Superior Court of California. There's a local one, and that's the one that you would be filing. And you file it in the probate division of the Superior Court of California. And you can file a conservatorship of the person over the person to make all those decisions about food, shelter, clothing, education, et cetera. And or you can also file a conservatorship over the estate of the person. So if the person has resources, assets, those would be estate of the person. And you can't file for a conservatorship before the person turns 18. In other words, you can't get a conservatorship for anyone below the age of 18. In California, it starts at 18 or older. Some people are conserved later in life, you know, when they're 80 or 90 years old or 50. Maybe someone is involved in a terrible accident and they lose their capacity to make decisions. Let's say they were involved in an accident and they had a traumatic brain injury, and now they've lost capacity. Well, how are things going to be accomplished for them, right? Who's going to make those decisions? It could be under a conservatorship, or maybe other ways, depending on the level of the loss of the capacity, right? And so at some point in time in Superior Court, the judge who's assigned to the case will have a lot of evidence before him or herself at a hearing and then decide whether this person should be conserved or not. And if the court agrees that the person should be conserved, it's going to last until the court takes away the conservatorship or the consumer dies. There has been some recent changes that I'm going to talk about that may make it easier for conservatorship to end also. And it's making the intent of this legislation was also to make it harder to conserve people. Especially then there's a need to make sure that all alternatives to a conservatorship have been considered. Excuse me. So the first one that we're going to talk about is the limited conservatorship. Excuse me, I need to. So a limited conservatorship is when, again, a judge is going to appoint someone to handle the rights that have been taken away from the person who has been conserved. And that person is called the conservatee. The person who has authority over that person is conservator. And so you can have a limited conservatorship of the person, and that's the person who's going to, the conservator is going to take care of that person's needs, right? Housing, food, everything. And there can be also a limited conservatorship of the estate. You don't really need a limited conservatorship of the estate if the only thing the person has is Social Security, because you can do that through a representative payee with Social Security. And you'll see in the next slide that under a limited conservatorship, you cannot control any earnings that the person who's conserved earns. Now, limited conservatorship is for people with developmental disabilities only. So if I'm a person with a mental health disability and my mom files for limited conservatorship over me of my person and my estate, the judge is going to deny the petition because I'm not a person with a developmental disability. So it's only for people with developmental disabilities. And if there's going to be an estate of a limited conservatorship of the estate, the court is going to require that a bond be procured, because when you're the conservator of an estate, you have the responsibility to protect assets, collect income, invest money, the money of the person, pay bills. So they will require a bond. So what are the seven rights that can be taken away? So let's say that my mom, I'm a person with a developmental disability. My mom files a petition for limited conservatorship in Superior Court, and she checks off that she wants all of these rights taken away from me. The right to determine where I live, to view my confidential records, to marry, to sign contracts, to get medical treatment, my social and sexual contacts, and to make decisions regarding my education. That's what she wants to do. Now, whether the judge agrees with that is could be another story. There are things that a limited conservatorship cannot do. So that you cannot get a limited conservatorship to control the salary of the person, to consent to harmful treatments of the person, to force drug treatments, to sterilize the person, to make the person undergo electroshock or psychotherapy. The only rights that you have in a limited conservatorship are the rights that the judge agrees to. And those rights are in the letters of conservatorship, an appointment of conservatorship. And that's it. So what happens after my mom files this petition for limited conservatorship? There's going to be an attorney appointed for me. There's going to be an investigator that's appointed also, and that investigator is going to talk to me and explain what's going on, interview me, interview a lot of people who know me, because they need to be convinced that these rights that my mom wants to take away are rights I don't have the capacity to make. Investigator is also going to ask me how I feel about this. Can I go to that hearing where the judge is going to decide whether to take away all those seven rights or not? Whether I oppose the conservatorship or whether I don't want my mom to, I don't oppose the conservatorship, but I don't want my mom to be the conservator either. I want someone else. So I was doing a training and one of the participants said that she had filed for conservatorship, limited conservatorship, and the investigator took 8 months to finalize the investigation. The investigator talked to everyone and even to family in Mexico. That's how long it took. I've heard in other trainings that it takes a lot less time from the time you file for, let's say, a limited conservatorship. You file your papers in court to the time that it's approved. It used to be the normal rule that you know, if you're thinking about a conservatorship for someone who's about to turn 18, the general rule was, well, okay, maybe you file 3 months. But I would say that you should call your superior court, the one that's in your area, the one where you will file your petition, and ask to speak to someone in the probate department and ask them how long, you know, how full is the calendar? And if the clerk says, oh, we're scheduling a hearing 6 months out because we're so booked, then you'll get an idea of when you should be filing your petition. But if the Superior Court clerk says, oh no, you know, we're scheduling hearings, you know, within the next 2 months, then, you know, you get an idea of when you should be filing this petition for conservatorship. Because remember, the person has to be 18. And if you do it too soon and the investigator's done with the investigation and it's ready to go to that hearing, it may be before the person turns 18, right? So you want to make sure that, you know, when everything is ready, the person is already 18, if this is what you want to do. The regional center can also file a report with the judge, where the regional center will describe the disability, the degree and nature of the disability, what kind of assistance I may need, because this is my case, right? My mom filed, my physical, mental, social well-being, and recommendations to the judge in this case. I can also go to my client's rights advocate, our sister organization, we're one and the same as the Office of Client Rights Advocates. So for every regional center, there's a client's rights advocate and an assistant client's rights advocate. They are not regional center employees. They are part of us. And they're there to advocate for regional center consumers or people who want to become regional center consumers. And so I can go to my client's rights advocate and say, look, this is what's happening. Can you explain this to me? And the person may even talk to me about the alternatives to conservatorship, may even talk to the investigator and the attorney assigned to the case. Once the investigator is done with the investigation, there will be a judge hearing. And the judge will have reviewed all of the evidence that was presented before him or her, all of these interviews, all of these reports, and the judge will determine whether all of those 7 rights should be taken away. And it's possible that the judge may say, you know what, mom, you want to take away those 7 rights, but I don't see any evidence that I should. The only rights I see evidence for taking away from Maria are maybe the right to contract or the right to marry. And maybe that is what the judge decides. And those will be the only rights under a limited conservatorship that my mom will have over me. So that is a limited conservatorship. It's an alternative for people with developmental disability to a full conservatorship, because really the goal is to keep the person as independent as possible, right? So in light of keeping a person with a disability as independent as possible, there was a bill that was passed and became Assembly Bill 1663. And as of January of this year, it established supported decision making as a formal alternative to conservatorship. And I'm going to talk about supported decision making. It's in the law. So now judges, before they agree that a limited conservatorship should be approved or a full conservatorship should be approved, the judge has to have evidence before him or her that alternatives to conservatorship were considered and why they do not work in this situation. That never happened. That was not a requirement that the judges had to do before January this year, but now it is. And an alternative that has to be considered is supported decision-making. Like I said, I'm gonna talk about that. And it also requires the court. The judge in my case approved the limited conservatorship just to take away my right to marry and my right to contract. As a conservatee, The court has to provide me information on the rights I retain, right? Like, what did I just lose and what do I still keep? And if the conservator and the conservatee agree to terminate the conservatorship, it can be done without a hearing. There doesn't have to be a hearing. Also, part of this law that's not there is it requires periodic review of the conservatorship and discussions with the conservatee, that would be me, about whether I wish to terminate the conservatorship or make it less restrictive. So there's this ongoing conversation that the court and has to have with me about this conservatorship. As a matter of fact, when a judge approves a limited conservatorship or conservatorship for a moment, or if that's the case, it doesn't end there with the court. The court will always have jurisdiction over that case. And in fact, after a petition has been approved, the investigator continues to make periodic interviews. So within the first year after an approved petition, the investigator will come out and interview people. And then every so often that will happen. So it's not as if, you now have the conservatorship and that's the end of it. No, there will always be the court involved. So if you move out of state, you need to go and discuss that with the judge. If you want to add a conservator, because you can have more than one conservator, you have to get approval by the court. There are many things that you need to do as a conservator to keep the court informed. You know, if you want to make changes, you have to get approval from the court. So there is that level of involvement when you were talking about conservatorships. So if you're interested in the bill, the text of the bill is here in this link. So let's talk about some other alternatives. They're really alternatives because what we've been talking about are conservatorships where you have to go to court. The judge has to approve. These things that I'm going to talk about don't require going to court. So supported decision making. In fact, you can have a limited conservatorship or a full conservatorship perhaps and still have supported decision making. It's not like you have to choose one or the other. Supported decision making can always happen no matter what. The other alternative, and now when we're talking about these next alternatives, we need to think about the capacity of the person to understand what they're signing. So do they have the ability to understand what they're signing with respect to a power of attorney, an advanced healthcare directive, different ways, different documents that you can use to get to be involved in medical decisions, educational decisions, and or ways to administer your finances. So supported decision making is now in the law as something that the judge in a conservatorship hearing has to consider before agreeing to a conservatorship. Will supported decision making help in the way such that we don't need this conservatorship? And if it doesn't, then why not? What did you do? What did you try, right? So you might be asking yourself, well, as a parent or a family member, I do supported decision making. I've always done it for my child. You know, I've always been there for my child. I'm the one making the decisions. Yeah, I consult with my child, but at the end of the day, I'm making the best decisions for my child. Well, supported decision is a bit different than that. In supported decision making, the person with the disability, let's say that's me, I'm going to make the final decision on my life. However, I'm going to have, or, you know, different things. However, I'm going to have people I can go to help me understand what I'm facing to communicate for me, to help me in ways to achieve my goals in my life, to understand things that come up. So for example, I can have a group of people to help me with my educational decisions. And maybe I can have another group of people to help me with my other life matters. Those are called circles of support. And I can change the people in my circle of support anytime. It doesn't matter how many people I have in my circle of support, it's up to me. And the circle of support and my supported decision-making circle, it could be very informal. There doesn't need to be a document saying that these people are in my circle of support and we're going to meet every month on a Friday for an hour to talk about my finances. You don't need it. Some people want it. And if you want it, there are examples of supported decision-making agreements. There's an entity called Disability Voices United, and they have a manual on supported decision making, and they also have examples of agreements. We've included the link at the end of the presentation to that manual should you want to see it. Powers of attorney. You don't have to go to court and get the court's approval for a power of attorney. It is a document that gives me, the consumer, the right to give someone else the ability to make decisions for me, perhaps with regard to my finances, my property, my education, my medical needs, my health. Now, powers of attorney can be, they're general or limited. When we talk about a general power of attorney, it means you've given someone the power of attorney over all your matters, generally your matters. A limited conservatorship could be that you're giving the person the authority to just decide financial matters or educational matters. It's very limited in the subject area. Powers of attorney can also be durable, meaning that they become effective. The power of attorney becomes effective in the moment of signing, or it can be springing. It won't become effective unless something happens. And we're going to be looking at a springing power of attorney, which is the Advanced Healthcare Directive. That's the springing power of attorney, because nothing happens until I lose my capacity to make medical decisions. And so my Advanced Healthcare Directive will indicate who that person or who those people will be who will make those kinds of decisions for me when I'm no longer around. You don't have to be a person with a disability to sign a power of attorney. You can be a person without a disability and sign a power of attorney to someone else. So let's say, for example, I'm going to be out of the country. I'm going to be in a remote place where there's no internet. So I am going to need, and I have a real estate matter that's going to close. I can give the power of attorney to my mom, for example, to handle my real estate matter. And the power of attorney is just for that. It's limited, right? And could be durable or springing depending on when I want it to happen. But I'm going to be gone. We need to sign these documents for the real estate matter, have to be signed. My mom will deal with it. And that power of attorney ends when the real estate and matter ends. That's it. So those are the different kinds of powers of attorney. Typically, powers of attorney need two witnesses. If you're dealing with real estate matters, they need to be, the power of attorney needs to be notarized. I know people sometimes ask, well, can you give us an example of a power of attorney so that we can use? I say, no, I'm not. I don't have it. Well, online powers of attorney in California, but I can't guarantee that they have everything in them that California law requires. My best advice is You can go to an attorney to draft a power of attorney. But note that that attorney will determine if the person has capacity to sign the document. What is capacity? So let's say that I'm a person with a developmental disability, and I want to sign a power of attorney giving my mom a durable general power of attorney. So she's going to handle all of my matters, and it's going to become effective on the day that it's signed. The attorney is going to decide whether I have capacity to sign this document. And what does it mean? In California, it means that I understand the benefits, the risk, and the effect of signing this power of attorney. As a person with a developmental disability, I don't need to understand all the big legal words in that power of attorney, but I do need to understand the benefits, the risk, and the effect of signing the power of attorney. Also, with the power of attorney, I can take away that power of attorney that I gave my mom and give it to someone else. Or I can decide, you know what, Maria, you handle your own affairs. And I can decide I don't want to give anyone a power of attorney over me. So that is a power of attorney. When we're talking about healthcare, it's called, in California, a medical power of attorney. And I was looking at the probate code section about medical power of attorney, and I was surprised to see that it includes not only the person would have the authority to determine where the person lives, providing meals, hiring household employees, providing transportation, and entertainment. I thought, wow, that's, in my mind, way beyond medical power of attorney, but apparently that's how it is. And usually this medical power of attorney is part of the Advanced Healthcare Directive. And that Advanced Healthcare Directive is a springing power of attorney, meaning it's not in effect at the time that I sign it. It will only come into effect when something happens. And what is that something? When I can no longer have the capacity to make my medical decisions. I'm in an accident. I had a terrible head injury. I'm in a coma. I'm in the hospital. Doctors are deciding whether they need to pull the plug or not. I can't make that decision because I'm in a coma. But if I have I've designated people or a person to do that. There are simple examples of advanced healthcare directives here in these links, but an estate planning attorney, and we have a referral list for these kinds of attorneys. They're also called elder law attorneys. These kinds of attorneys can help with an advanced healthcare directive, power of attorneys, conservatorships. They do all these things. My husband and I had some estate planning done. And part of the estate planning was also an advanced healthcare directive. Our advanced healthcare directive is over 18 pages long. Believe me, I never knew that you had to make decisions over so many things you don't think about. I strongly really advised going to a professional to draft these things so that, you know, it covers everything and it's complete and it's according to the law in California. The right to make medical decisions. Again, we're talking about the person who's signing a document needs to be able to understand what they're signing, right? What the effect, benefits, and risk are of signing the document. You can handle medical decisions with that power of attorney, advanced healthcare directive. Another way to do it is to, if I'm the person who, let's say my mom wants to get information from my doctor. I'm an adult now. And she calls my doctor's office and they say, sorry, mom, we can't give you the information because we don't have a release signed from Maria. Well, then I would have to sign that release to allow my mom to get that medical information. But I need to understand what I'm signing, right? One way that we do it is we get the person, our client, and we call the doctor and we explain who we are and that we have their patient on the line. And sometimes we get information that way. Most of the time, though, the doctor's office will say to us, you know, we need you to sign, we need Maria or the client to sign the release. But again, remember the understand what he or she is signing. The right to make educational decisions. So we have a special ed rights and responsibilities manual, and there's a form there that the student can sign, allowing, for example, if my mom has been attending all my IEPs before I was 18, and next week, and I turn 18 today, and next week there's an IEP meeting, and my mom goes, as she always has done with me, to my IEP meeting, and the team says to my mom, "Mom, you cannot be here. You have no legal right to be here. But with this letter that I sign, my mom can be there. She can continue to participate in my IEPs." You can also get the right to make educational decisions through a power of attorney or a limited conservatorship. But the easy way to do it is to just have this form signed if it's possible. The right to make, oopsie daisy, I think, oh, hold on. I had a glitch here with my PowerPoint. Hold on. Okay. I think what I did is there we go. Back on track here. Okay. Other information. Let's say I was involved in an auto accident. There's a police report. My mom calls the police department and says, "I'd like to get a copy of that police report." You know what the police officer is going to say? "Sorry, ma'am, we can't give you that report because you weren't involved in the accident." And they're right. Where you're going to need to have a Maria sign a release so that we can release that in that report to you. And so my mom would have to ask, "Would send me the release or can I go pick up the release?" Almost everyone who asks for a release, they have their own release. So you always want to ask for their release, right? Because you could draft a release yourself, but they may say that that's not adequate and they want you to sign their own release. The other way we get general information is we can call the agency with our client on the phone and say, "Hey, we're calling and the person is here. Can we get this information?" Sometimes it works. Other times they say, "No, you have to sign our release." To manage finances, you can do it through a power of attorney. If the only thing that you're getting is Social Security benefits, then you can do it through a representative payee. You don't need anything else because you don't have anything else. There's nothing else to manage except your Social Security, and that could be through a representative payee. As a regional center client, when you turn 18, you're entitled to request independent living services, where they teach you how to navigate in the community, clean your house, cook, do many things that help you become more independent, including managing your money. Another way to manage money is to establish a special needs trust. You do that through an estate planning attorney, and the trustee is the person who handles that money, will take care of managing the money according to the special needs trust laws, right? Because there are certain things you can spend that money on. Joint bank account. My mom and I can go to a bank and open a bank account as joint owners. So she has the ability to manage my account, as do I. A big caveat here is don't commingle. My mom shouldn't put her money into my bank account. It should just be my money, especially if I'm receiving SSI or some other benefit where income counts. You don't want to start, my mom doesn't want to start putting her money into that bank account, that joint bank account, because that could cause a lot of problems. The other way to manage finances is to open an ABLE account. It's an account, it's called CalABLE in California, and Raymond or Lonnie can put the link in chat, where if I qualify for an ABLE account, I could put money into my ABLE account and spend it on qualified disability expenses. And I can assign, or if I don't have capacity, an authorized legal representative can open the account and manage the account. Even if I have capacity, I can still assign someone to be the authorized legal representative for that account. And that person is the only person who can manage the account. So you see, there are different ways of managing finances. And lastly, the Welfare and Institutions Code is where you're going to find the set of laws that deals with regional centers and everything related to regional centers. And section 4655 says that the director of the regional center can make some medical, surgical, and dental treatment decisions where the consumer doesn't have anyone who ought to authorize that, or whether a consumer does have someone that could authorize that but is not responding within a reasonable time, then the director can decide to consent or not. And that the director can also decide to initiate the conservatorship process. The code section is in the link, but you know, so that's something that the regional center can do. I've included links to our publication on limited conservatorships, more information on AB 1663, the supported decision-making handbook. California courts, if you go on to this link, has a lot of useful information on full conservatorships and limited conservatorships. Before COVID, some of these superior courts had self-help clinics where people could go and learn more about conservatorships and limited conservatorships. Then it all closed down during COVID. I don't know if those superior courts are up and have their self-help clinics and conservatorships and limited conservatorships running or not. You should call your local superior court and find out, if they've started that up again. There's a document on determining competency to sign durable power of attorney in California and a resource for advanced healthcare directives. So we have come to the end of the presentation, and we can open it up for questions.